The great Mughal emperor, Jalaluddin Muhammad Akbar, died in 1605. He left behind a fairly secure empire that could largely run on its own, without much intervention from the sovereign. This was a very different empire than the one Akbar himself had inherited from his father, Humayun. Since its founding in 1526, the Mughal empire hadn't been on solid ground until Akbar restructured it. With Akbar's death, his son Salim ascended to the throne with the title of Jahangir. This video is brought to you by, well, you guys. Thanks to my patrons for supporting the channel and making these videos possible. Al-Muqaddima is funded only by Patreon, and as you can see, the videos take a long time to research, edit, and produce. And it's only because of my patrons that I am able to put this kind of time into these videos and keep them free from any kind of paywall. So, if you want to pledge a dollar or more to support the channel, you can head over to my Patreon. Link is in the description. You can also become a member right here on YouTube. There's some cool stuff that comes with it. Back to the video. Akbar's eldest son, Prince Salim, had been born in 1569. The story goes that Akbar had begged God for a son. He walked barefoot to the shrine of a Sufi saint named Sheikh Salim Chishti, after whom the prince would be named. As a prince, Salim knew his value to his father and acted out a lot, being the spoiled brat that he was. Already in the 1590s, he had begun showing impatience to succeed his father, a pattern that would repeat in the history of the Mughal Empire. In 1599, when Akbar was busy campaigning in the south, Salim had gathered supporters and led an army against Agra, the former capital of the empire and an economic center. Before the news could reach Akbar, though, Akbar's mother, Salim's grandmother, had a heart-to-heart with Salim and told him to back off, which he did, falling back to his base in Allahabad. This wasn't exactly the end of his claim to the sovereign title, though. Akbar rushed back to the capital, leaving his close friend and advisor, Abul Fazl, in charge of the campaign. When Abul Fazl was returning to the court, Salim arranged for him to be assassinated, fearing that he might advise Akbar to take stern actions against Salim, which might even have culminated in his removal from succession. Akbar and Salim had a reconciliation in 1603, though, but it was short-lived. Akbar, being the brilliant strategist that he was, had a contingency plan for Salim. He had started preparing Salim's younger brother, Danial, for succession, which only further pissed Salim off. The insult being added to the injury came when Akbar let Danial use the red royal tent reserved for the emperor during a campaign. This was the insult. The actual injury was that Akbar was preparing Salim's own son against him. Prince Khosrow was only 7 when Akbar gave him a title in 1594, sending him away from Salim's household. By 1603, he was 17 and had a powerful status himself. In addition to Akbar promoting him to high positions, he was the nephew of Raja Man Singh, the most powerful of Akbar's Rajput vassals. He was also the son-in-law of Aziz Koka, Akbar's foster brother and another very powerful Mughal vassal. In 1604, Danial died of alcoholism. Akbar's other son, Murad, had already died in 1599, so the throne was obviously going to pass to Salim. But now Salim was aware that his own son might attempt to dethrone him, just as he had attempted to dethrone his father. I guess what goes around comes around. That same year, Akbar's mother died, and when Salim arrived in Agra for the funeral, he and Akbar seemed to have had an argument, which resulted in Akbar banning him from getting any alcohol or opium for the duration of his stay. Salim had something of a dependency on both by this point. This, once again, showed the Mughal vassals that Salim wasn't quite fit to succeed Akbar. However, Akbar didn't officially choose Khosrow as his heir, and Salim ascended to the throne in 1605 when Akbar died. He chose the title of Jahangir, the world possessor. Even though Jahangir and Khosrow had a reconciliation, Khosrow wasn't willing to let go of his ambition. He gathered supporters and marched towards Punjab to take the city of Lahore, which had been Akbar's capital. However, the governor refused to open the gates and Khosrow started a siege. Meanwhile, Jahangir arrived with his army and defeated his son, who then fled to Kabul. Khosrow was captured and humiliated. His followers were impaled and hung on the roads. Khosrow was confined to Agra Fort, but he continued plotting against his father. He was finally partially blinded, which ended his ambition pretty quickly. By this time in Punjab, the religion of Sikhism was starting to gain influence. It was during the lifetime of Sikhism's founder, Baba Guru Nanak, that the Mughal Empire was first established by Babur, Jahangir's great-grandfather. In many ways, the story of Babur and Nanak's successors were bound together. Akbar had been at peace with the Sikhs and had even gifted them land where they founded their central city of Amritsar. During the rebellion of Khusro, the fifth Sikh guru, Guru Arjan Dev, had met Khusro and given him his blessing. As Jahangir himself puts it, Khusro happened to halt at the place where he, Guru Arjan Dev, was. He came out and did homage to him. He behaved to Khusro in certain special ways and made on his forehead a finger mark in saffron, which the Hindus call kashka and is considered auspicious. When this came to my ears and I clearly understood his folly, I ordered them to produce him and, having confiscated his property, commanded that he should be put to death. Jahangir had Guru Arjan Dev brought to him where he told him to convert to Islam or die. Guru Arjan Dev chose death and was tortured and killed. The story of the Sikhs and the Mughals is a fascinating one, but it's a story for another time. Right now, let's stay with the Mughals. Secure in his power, Jahangir now put together his court. His supporters were given high positions, and even some of Khusro's supporters were restored to favor, although Raja Man Singh was removed as the governor of Bengal and instead his son was promoted. At this point, Jahangir somewhat shifts to the background of the empire's story and other characters come forth. In 1611, he met a remarkable woman named Mehrul Nissa. She was a mature woman of 34 who was raising a daughter from a previous marriage. Jahangir seems to have fallen in love immediately and married her a few months later, making her his 18th wife. She was given the name of Noor Jahan, the light of the world. She was a capable, intelligent, independent, and beautiful woman who could and once did kill 4 tigers with 6 shots without a single miss. Where most empresses' portraits show their delicate side, one of her portraits shows her loading a musket. Within months of her marriage to Jahangir, she began exercising control on his behalf. Both her father and brother were members of the court, which gave her support. She, along with her father, Etamad-ud-Daulah, and brother Asif Khan, brought a Mughal prince into her influence. This prince, named Khurram, was Jahangir's 3rd son. She married Khurram to her niece Arjumand Banu, whom history would remember as Mumtaz Mahal, the woman buried in the Taj Mahal. Khurram was now the new favorite to succeed the emperor since Khusro was blind. Unlike most Mughal princes, Khurram wasn't blinded by ambition, lust for power, or even wine and opium, which really says something. Some sources mention that he didn't touch wine till he was 24, and even then only on the insistence of his father. Khurram had proved himself in the battlefield by having defeated the only Rajput house that did not join the Mughals, the Sisodias, in 1615. Khurram had achieved what even Akbar had failed to. Although that says more about the Sisodias and their leadership than it does about Khurram. Khurram had also treated the Sisodias in the same kindness and acceptance that Akbar had treated his defeated enemies with. Khurram was the perfect prince to one day become Shahnshah. Like all North Indian rulers, including the current one, Jahangir was also driven by the desire to tame South India. By 1615, Jahangir's generals had already led some 5 campaigns into the south, but they hadn't achieved much. After much warfare and diplomacy, the Mughals were able to gain a foothold in the Deccan as far as Burhanpur, which they used as a staging area for their desire to eventually conquer all of the Deccan. In 1617, Khurram led a campaign into the Deccan to finally make some permanent gains. Although how much of the gains were made by him and how much were made by his generals is a matter of dispute. Still, Khurram took credit for the victories, which resulted in him being honored by Jahangir with the title of Shah Jahan, the ruler of the world. Also, he was given a mansab of 30,000, which was unprecedented since the mansabs had only gone as far as 10,000 previously. With Shah Jahan becoming more and more popular and Noor Jahan becoming more and more power hungry, the two powerful figures of the Mughal court were now on a collision course. Jahangir's health had been worsening since 1616 due to his addiction to wine and opium. According to some sources, he was so weak that his hands trembled and he couldn't even pick up a glass. With Shah Jahan becoming arrogant, Nur Jahan began looking for another candidate that would be easier to control. That candidate was Shah Jahan's younger brother, Prince Shahryar. Even though he was an untested youth in 1620, Nur Jahan began preparing him to succeed. She married him to her own daughter from her previous marriage, although her power was actually declining. Her father died around the same time, and as she became hostile to Shah Jahan, her brother Asaf Khan, Shah Jahan's father-in-law, sided with Shah Jahan. Since Jahangir was weakened, it looked like he might die at any time. She convinced him to send Shah Jahan away from the capital to lead a campaign in the Deccan. Shah Jahan realized that this might weaken his position if his father died, so he asked for Khosrow to be handed to him because he was, in his eyes, the only other candidate for the throne. As Jahangir fell ill in the same year, 1620, Shah Jahan prepared to march on the capital to claim the throne. His first step was killing Khosrow. Though shortly after, Jahangir recovered and asked about Khosrow's death. He refused to believe that Khosrow had died from stomach illnesses. Shah Jahan, overnight, fell out of favor with his father. By 1622, the father and the son became so hostile that Jahangir revoked his title, driving Shah Jahan into rebellion. Jahangir brought a veteran commander named Mahabat Khan back from exile in Afghanistan and gave him command of his army. Mahabat Khan swept across the Indian subcontinent, delivering defeat on the prince twice. In 1626, Shah Jahan appealed to Nur Jahan for a royal pardon after some 3 years in exile. She, in return, asked for some key forts and two of his sons as, for the lack of a better word, hostages. 10-year-old Prince Dara Shikoh and 8-year-old Prince Aurangzeb were sent to Lahore, the Mughal capital. Shah Jahan was somewhat fully reintegrated into the Mughal court. Okay, let's step away from family drama and focus on frontier drama for a while. During Jahangir's reign, the region of Bengal was fully annexed and brought into Mughal fold. The process had been started by Akbar around 1575 and was completed by Jahangir's generals around 1613. Though the most interesting frontier was the southern one. Like I mentioned before, all North Indian rulers wanted to tame South India. Akbar had started the conquest, but Jahangir wanted to be the one to complete it. There were already three Islamic sultanates in the Deccan: Bidar Sultanate, the Adil Shahi of the Bijapur Sultanate, and Ahmednagar Sultanate. Ahmednagar was the first target of the Mughals. The rulers were terribly weak, and the Mughals had already taken their capital, but the Sultanate was being propped up by two groups: the Hindu Maratha warriors and the African Habshi slave soldiers. The leader of the Habshis was Malik Ambar, an East African slave soldier brought to India in the early 1570s. He was bought by the Peshwa, or Prime Minister, of Ahmednagar, who died in 1574, and Ambar had become free, hence a freelance soldier. The Indian subcontinent at the time had a thriving market for military. Even Portuguese sailors left their service for Lisbon to become freelancers here. He served all the sultanates of the Deccan from time to time and received the title of Malik from the Sultan of Bijapur. Ambar quickly became powerful and gained his own Habshi soldiers. When the Mughals invaded Ahmednagar lands, it was Ambar and his men who pushed them back. He installed a puppet king over the Ahmednagar throne and married his daughter to him, making him Sultan Murtaza Nizam Shah II. Jahangir was so frustrated with Ambar's resilience that in 1616, he commissioned this painting. See that? That's like the 17th century fake news. The other group keeping Ahmednagar alive were the Marathas. They were integrated into state machinery and given land grants. They also made up a substantial portion of the military of the three remaining sultanates. The Marathas would eventually rise up to found their own empire after the Deccan sultanates fell. Malik Ambar, after his son-in-law died, put his grandson on the throne as his second puppet. He died in 1626. The next year, in October of 1627, Shahanshah Nuruddin Muhammad Salim Jahangir died while returning from Kashmir, where Mughal emperors often used to spend their summers due to its peaceful climate. By this time, Jahangir was pretty much just there. His health was so bad that Nur Jahan was pretty much ruling on his behalf. In his own words, he needed nothing more than a kilo of wine and half a kilo of meat. Both Asaf Khan and Nur Jahan were part of the royal caravan. Asaf Khan immediately put his sister in custody and released Shah Jahan's sons. He also sent a courier to Shah Jahan, who was in the Deccan, informing him of his father's death. Shah Jahan started his march back to Lahore to take the throne. Before arriving, he ordered his family tree to be truncated. His brother Shahryar, the two sons of the deceased Khosrow, and the two sons of his late uncle Danial were to be executed in preparation of his coronation. Clearly, Shah Jahan didn't want the family drama that had plagued the Mughals for so long. Although, like I said, what goes around usually comes around. On February 4th, 1628, at an hour chosen by an astrologer, Shahnshah Shahabuddin Muhammad Khurram Shah Jahan ascended to the throne of the Mughal Empire. See you next time. Don't forget to press the bell icon. On the screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.